Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on using analytics to improve collector performance. Collections has long been more about art than science. Being someone who had good phone skills and who was good at getting individuals to make a payment, it was subjective and not something that necessarily could be quantified easily, but that is changing. Speech analytics, call recording, the emphasis on compliance, and other objective metrics are making it easier for collection agencies to assess the performance of their collection agents. And I'm looking forward to spending the next hour with this esteemed panel of experts talking about this important topic. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Provana. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the RM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the RM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Mike Killer is the Vice President of Collections for American Profit Recovery. He joined APR more than a decade ago as an entry-level employee. He is a licensed collection manager in Michigan and serves as a subject matter expert for the Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. Nick Jarman is the Chief Operating Officer of Credit Collection Partners and owner of Right Away Consulting and Coaching. He recently served a three-year term on the board of directors for ACA International and is the past president of the Missouri Collectors Association. Nick has also been recognized by ACA International with the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives. Kelly Kruger is the Vice President of Organizational Development and Training for CVE Companies. Kelly has 22 years of experience in training and development and currently oversees all matters relating to employee development and engagement. She's been with CVE on and off since 1996 and specializes in sales, persuasion, customer service, recovery, and management training. Her training focuses on the development of human talent, utilizing the latest innovations in human performance technology. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. Finally, a recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that out of the way, let's jump into the discussion. And first, let's start, at the 30,000 foot level broadly. And Mike, I'll give you the first question. Maybe you can talk a little bit about the data points that you use to assess the performance of your collectors.
Yeah, absolutely. So quotients, right? So our performance quotients, which would be the first side of the coin. We've got activity metrics, so typical inputs, calls, minutes on the phone. We break this down in 8-hour blocks. And then we've got hours, overtime work, contacts, etc. The second category of performance quotients is our teamwork marks. So we're very fond of tracking assists, so getting payments for other collectors, payment verifications, the items that you can kind of lump under teamwork. Third category of performance quotients would be quality of work. So we're able to objectively look at things like queue management, script progression, skip tracing, those types of items. And then really the fourth category I'd put under that performance quotient would be performance outcomes. So we talk a lot about inputs, but what are the outputs? So again, net recovery rate, payments, your typical posted a checks net number. A lot of people are probably familiar with that. The other side of the coin, under those data points would be compliance. So we've got our compliance scorecard, which compliance and performance, two sides of the same coin. And under that, I would lump things like consumer authentication, your debt collector disclosures, mini Mirandas. So some of the more typical things, and then some of the nuanced things, that has been a challenge, but interesting to quantify in objective ways is verbiage, tone, volume, etiquette. Were you helpful? Try to quantify that. You can do it, but it's not as easy as some of the checkbox items like mini Miranda. So that's your 300 foot view.
Excellent. Thank you. Sorry. Nick, talk a little bit about how it's done at CCP, maybe compare and contrast with what Mike was saying.
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, really comes down to revenue. What is somebody generating? Because at the end of the day, all of the different metrics lead up to revenue. Because you can have somebody that is doing an excellent job in what they're supposed to be doing, but then they're not generating the revenue. So I think first and foremost comes down to revenue, and then it kind of funnels down. Some of the things that we like to look at are, you know, the right party contacts. Are they getting enough contacts? Are they getting enough opportunity to get to the revenue dollars that we need to get to? From those right party contacts, are they getting enough payments? Are the payments that they're getting from the right party contacts good enough? And that's where we would look at the closing percentage of, you know, what they're doing. How many payments are they getting divided by how many right party contacts? As Mike mentioned, the dialer stats, you know, we want to look at talk time, wait time. Those are, you know, kind of productive times that we look at versus non-productive times, such as wrap up and not ready. So, and then one other one that I would say is really important is attendance. What is their attendance ratio, so to speak? You know, because we can look at somebody and say, they're not doing a good enough job. Well, why are they not doing a good enough job? And we can start with all of these other extracurricular and ancillary things, but if they're not coming to work, we might not need to look any further than just their attendance. So I think that's really where we would begin from a 30,000 square foot.
So sometimes it's not even, you know, you start with the simple stuff, I guess, and maybe sort of build out from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, once again, we can look at the revenue and see who's producing the revenue. And then, you know, in the next step, you can look at, okay, well, somebody's not producing the revenue. One of the first things that I'm going to look at is what's their attendance. You know, if they're missing 3 or 4 days a month, I really don't need to dive into their closing rate, their post dates, their payments, their right party contacts. I know that they're not doing what they need to be doing because they're not here. And, you know, and so we want to focus on why they're not here, what the attendance issues are, and how we can make it better.
Yeah, that is a really good point. This is Kelly. That is one thing we also do is look for engagement. It's again, a fuzzy thing to try to measure. But if, like he said, if they're not here, then there's something else going on. And when the days that they are here, if they're highly productive, then that's a different story. But if they're not productive and not here, then we have to measure much, much more. And I guess sometimes that's where, is it skill or will? Trying to figure out how to measure those data points as well.
When you say engagement, Kelly, are you talking about sort of engagement, like a collector's engagement with their job? Or are you talking more sort of a collector's engagement, you know, when they're out making calls? Or both?
Both. I would say engagement is all-encompassing in regards to the position. So if they're engaged in the job, meaning they come to work every day and they seek feedback and they're looking for ways that they can be better, then we actually keep track of that in our organization. Is how often does an employee come in and talk to their supervisor, not just asking questions they might not know the answer to, but more on seeking feedback and looking for growth. So I think one of the things that you have on the list to talk about is what other data points would you add to look at? And that is one that we added, which is really an unusual thing to add in regards to how do I know if somebody's going to be successful? Because we try to predict success as well. And where's our best use of time spent?
That's really interesting. So is that just like a sort of number, like they came in 3 times this week or this month, or, and it just sort of gets incorporated into whatever that assessment or evaluation score is?
Mm-hmm. So We have it broken down into number of times that they've asked for help, and then number of times or the kind of help that they've asked for. So are they looking for, do they want to be better as a collector, or do they want to, are they looking for growth, or do they want to be signed a mentor? So it's really what kind of questions are they asking as well, or what kind of help they're asking for.
Excellent. We talked, Kelly sort of opened the door a little bit in terms of the data points or, what you'd like to add, and maybe for one reason or another haven't been able to yet. Nick, are there sort of data points out there that you think might be helpful down the line or on the horizon that you can see incorporating into your assessments?
I think really the one thing that we try to focus on the most is really just the in-call percentage. When they're on the telephone, because we want to make sure that we're not wasting as much time as possible, and I think that in call percentage, that talk time, is really where it's going to make the biggest difference, because you hear everywhere from 30 to 50% talk time. Well, if we can increase that by 5-7%. Let's say we're at a 30% talk time, and we get that up to 37%. Well, 7% over however many thousands of hours starts to move the needle, so to speak. So I would say just really focusing on the dialer efficiency and the efficiency to get where they need to be. And it's really about how many calls can we get to an agent, and then how can they resolve them.
Thanks. What about you, Mike? Any other sort of data point wish list data point that you have?
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly tweaking and playing around with different data points. Some end up flushing out and they make sense to keep, and a lot of them, quite frankly, don't. And so we get rid of them. But we've got items like internal locus of control, and conscientiousness for screening, more so for hiring as opposed to performance, but also indicators of performance, right? So it's related. I wouldn't mind something like a measure for someone's ability to think on their feet, and maybe use that as a screening measure too, as opposed to performance. But
that is interesting. I guess any idea how you'd go about tracking that?
I'll be interested to find out.
I think everybody would. All right. At this point, what I'd like to do is pause the discussion, and I'd like to invite Sean Clark from Provana to say a few words.
I appreciate that, Mike. Good afternoon.
Sean, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sean Clark. I'm the Vice President of the Platform Group for Provana. Just a quick note about who we are. Provana is the leading provider of back office support and comprehensive software solutions in the collection industry. And we see it that used either independently or collectively, our services and platforms help improve performance, profitability, and consumer satisfaction throughout the ARM industry. So we work with so many companies that we've had the chance to see the same issues and opportunities over and over. We see collection platforms that definitely miss the mark in addressing your pain points, certainly not being able to capture or effectively represent a lot of the points that the panelists are talking about today. Now, missed opportunities in inventory and difficulty in managing to those data points in your collection floors and call centers. So to tackle these issues and help support companies, we've created a suite of software solutions, two of which I'd like to introduce you to today, IDAP and ICAP. So IDAP, which we're looking at on the screen right now, this is one sample from IDAP. This is our integrated data analytics platform. This is a platform bolt on to your existing platform, providing you near real-time access to best practice reporting. The IDAP Foundation starts as a series of 12 executive dashboards, predefined by our team to get you up and rolling with advanced reporting very quickly. And then from there, we offer a lot of ways to customize and tailor that experience around your needs. This software is interactive, it's intuitive, and it's designed to help you find these missed opportunities in your inventory and chances to predict the future. ICAP is our integrated call analytics platform. In partnership with CallMiner, we've developed a platform that is custom built to improve both compliance and collection performance for your agents. We deploy speech analytics against 100% of your consumer interactions and calls. We deploy pre-built and customizable dashboards, both at the management and the agent level, providing you the tools for both high-level analytics and tactical self-coaching against best practices. Our analysts help you deploy, integrate, and utilize speech analytics for fast early return on investment and lasting impact, again, against many of the metrics and points that our panelists are talking about today. So Provana is really proud to sponsor this accountsreceivable.net webinar. I really appreciate your time, and I'm going to hand you back to your panelists.
Thanks, Sean, and thanks again to Provana for sponsoring today's webinar. Now let's pick up with our discussion. And Mike, I wanted to circle back to something you said early in your first question about the data points that you collect. You did a great job listing all the data points. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit maybe about how those data points are collected, what goes into pulling all those data points into an evaluation or an assessment.
Well, luckily for us, or maybe unfortunately, you get to decide, but we're on three different collection platforms, all of which are antiquated, so we're building our own. And so the new model is how we are collecting data. So basically just designing it ourselves. I'm not really sure, and I've talked about it before, I'm not really sure what it is about collection software. Maybe it's just high expectations from me. Maybe I'm the issue, but it seems that everything I've seen is antiquated. It doesn't really do what we'd like it to do. So we just develop our own.
So you're pulling in all of these data points from like a built-in sort of system that integrates into the different collection systems?
Yeah, so we're using SQL Server to pull from multiple databases. We're also partnering with a collection software company and building our own, so to mimic what we're currently doing with SQL.
Got it. Thanks. Kelly, a question for you. Who's responsible at your agency for conducting or for sort of aggregating all of this information, the data points, and then conducting the performance assessments?
So we have a data analytics team that gathers all of that information for us, but it does filter down to the operations management team and the leadership team. So usually it's the collector's supervisor who then gives them feedback every month. And then, you know, the supervisor's manager gives the supervisor feedback, because it is actually ultimately the supervisor's responsibility to make sure collectors know how to do their job and are doing it successfully. We also have a training team that steps in, and they're the ones who, you know, sometimes the supervisor is the heavy, and they say this is what you need to get better at, and then the training team comes in and teaches them the how. So it's definitely a joint effort, and it goes back to it takes a village to raise a really great collector.
Well put, Nick. Is that similar to how the assessments are collected and managed at your agency? Nick?
Oh, sorry about that. I was on mute. Yeah, I definitely would concur with that.
Got it. Thanks.
And one of the things I wanted to make and I don't want to make this like a shameless plug, but I know that Mike had said that there was, you know, they're working on like four different collection systems and having a difficulty sometimes pulling these data together. There is a company, they're the only ones that I know that really kind of do this, and that's the Intellitech Group out of Washington. They can actually, you know, we utilize them because our collection system doesn't necessarily provide us with all the input and data that we need. So we basically do a monthly data dump and just give them every bit of information that we have. And that's what they specialize in, is putting back and bringing back reports that are custom to you when you set them up. So again, shameless plug, I'm sorry if I did that, but they definitely come in handy when it comes to the collection system not having the ability to give you the metrics that you need.
Thanks. Nick, back to you. Does the type of debt being collected impact the data point included in assessment?
Yeah, I would agree. The type of debt, whether it's financial services, whether it's utility, municipality type debt, it all plays a factor because, when you're dealing with, for instance, utility debt, and these are, debts where they need to get these things paid based on their ability to have utilities turned back on. Whereas you have a financial services debt, which may be an auto deficiency account, where they no longer have the car, they're not necessarily as concerned about it, and maybe they've got another car. And then on top of that, you may have municipality debt, where you're dealing with traffic tickets, which could lead to warrants, which could lead to the ability to not have your driver's license and have it suspended. So I think that the analytics needs to be customized to the portfolios or the types of debt that you're collecting on.
This is Kelly. I totally agree. It does depend on the kind of debt. Like if you have a high volume kind of portfolio where lots of calls and lots of people answering their phones, versus the kind of debt where you rarely have contacts, makes a huge difference. We have in the past, and I think we still do just a little, is we really measure the first call conversion rate, which helps us know what kind of, like the collectors and their communication styles. Our goal is to really get that account resolved on the first contact versus us having to call back and call back and call back based on the fee rate. So if it's a high volume client with a low fee rate, we don't want to have to call them back three or four times. So first call conversion is something we really like to measure in those areas.
So you measure that across on all the different types of debt that you collect, or just some of them?
Just some of them. In some of our accounts, there's no way you can convert a call on the first contact. There's back end work that needs to be done either on our side or on the consumer side. So there's no way that they could resolve it. But in several of our portfolios, we do measure it because it's a possibility that they could call. And, this is not a secret. Once they know who we are and they figured out your caller ID, they're not going to answer the call. So you want to get them to pay on the first contact.
What about you, Mike? Do you notice, or do you have any different methods or data points that you collect based on different types of debt that the agency might be collecting?
Yeah, we do, particularly with the medical side. But yeah, I agree with Kelly. 74%, by the way, Kelly. We track that. It's really important. If you're collecting or converting, that much of your initial contacts to payments, then the real goal is to get someone on the phone, right? But to digress a little bit, Mike, yeah, medical, it's everything from medical side is coming over line items. So you really have one consumer with, five line items. Well, if you get that paid, is it five payments? So you have to make sure you're comparing apples to apples. And then industry specific, you just want to take a really good look across the board what your expectations are. And you have all the information, right? You have your historical data on how well you've done based on a class of business or based on your portfolios. So you have all the information. It's just a matter of pulling it out. But if I can back up even one more step further to, who's responsible for the performance assessments, it's managers. It's work team leaders for sure. What we also do is we have real-time reports. So we want to put it in front of the collectors every minute of every hour of every day. We want them to manage their own performance first. And yes, we want to be there for development and training and support and monthly one-on-ones, but you know, that's how you know you've got, you know, someone that's going to be successful is if they're their own worst critic and they're constantly looking at their own performance metrics to see how they can improve. And you can only do that if you get reports in front of them that are accurate, right? Behaviorism, right? So constant reinforcement. But what are you reinforcing if you don't discuss anything? And not to say this is occurring, but just hypothetically, if you're only discussing performance once a month after that month is finished, how are you going to improve during the month? You know, so we think that's pretty important, is to get consistent reports in front of them that are real time that collectors can access to differing degrees. You get some collectors that don't look at them very often, even though you're emailing them twice a day. And you get some collectors that, you know, they constantly have the reports in front of them while they're outbound on calls. It's pretty telling.
Oh, I love this. I totally agree. It didn't even occur to me that that's something that we measure, but yeah, it's having collectors own their own business, basically. So that's how you really do build professional collectors, or how you know you have a professional collector, is if they're looking at those reports every day and owning their own performance. That's a really good point. I'm glad you talked about that.
So do you make everything that you sort of collect available to the collectors then? Can they see all of the data points that you're collecting, or just some of them?
96%. Most of it, yeah. Yeah, most of it's going to be, completely transparent and accessible. There might be some things that are more sensitive that, you know, are need to know, but that's few and far in between.
Yeah, same here.
We want them to know what we're tracking, right?
And okay. do you find that you said most employees, most are sort of very aware of that or keeping track of that information as they're going about their job on a daily basis?
Yeah, what we see is if someone makes it a year, there's probably good reason to believe that they'll be here another 2 years. And some of the things that come out when you drill down into that data are the hours in attendance, right? All the behavioral things. Are the compliance, you know, are they helpful and compliant? And then the performance, right? Are they increasing their nets and building up their post dates? All of those things are relative. But what we also see is, as Kelly was saying, they take stake in their own future. You know, they want to build their own bank of business internally. And there's a few ways to get at that. It's quite easy to track, emails that are viewed, or, you know, how many times a particular report's accessed.
And that's, again, just to kind of flesh out the point, that's something that, you know, they can sort of access at any time while they're, you know, while they're sitting at their desk, or is that something that's only available to them, you know, like when they're not on the phone, for example, or something like that?
Yeah, it's available anytime. Yep.
So we
that's
have
why you get the system. That's why you get the second monitor.
So we have the same kind of system where collectors can see the data anytime they want, the system that they can log into at any time and see all of their information. What I have found valuable is they can also see the information of their peers and other collectors. So collectors are pretty competitive. So if they can see what somebody else is doing, it also causes them to maybe make some shifts in their behavior or their style or how they're doing things, so they can get to the same level as maybe someone that they're competing with.
Absolutely. Great point.
We talked a little bit about compliance and how that kind of incorporates or gets incorporated into an assessment, and how that can sort of be analyzed. Compliance can be sort of somewhat subjective and not objective, like, you know, how many calls somebody made. So Nick, I'm curious how you incorporate compliance into performance evaluations and the analytics that you conduct.
Yeah, so this was one of the struggles that we had back in 2012-13 when the CFPB put out their information on what they were looking at for debt collections. And I've got a quote that I like that says, it's all about compliance until it's about performance, and it's all about performance until it's about compliance. So, you know, at the end of the day, we're in a production-driven environment. We're a for-profit entity. But in order to do that, we have to make sure that we're complying with all the different rules and regulations, company policies, client policies, and things like that. So, you know, I think that it is best to keep the compliance part as objective as possible. And then by in that, I mean they did it or they didn't. So if you're doing, let's say, a scorecard, one example is that I've done in the past is we've created a compliance scorecard. And the compliance scorecard not only consisted of compliance-related matters such as the mini Miranda, the two-party consent, following state laws, following guidelines, but it was also compliance with making sure that we're generating the most money. Are we demanding the balance in full? Are we offering a settlement? Are we progressing the call correctly? And, you know, by doing that, it became objective. They either offered to get the balance in full paid or they didn't. They offered a settlement or they didn't. They gave them any Miranda or they didn't. So forth and so on. So I think that, you know, you can use as few or as many as you would like when it comes to the type of compliance materials that you're using. But it's best to keep them as objective as possible. One, that keeps the integrity of the process in line with the collectors, and it builds that trust. And then also you're not having to have that one person or group of people that are monitoring these calls be subjective, like, oh, well, I think they might have done it. Oh, they didn't do it. Really, you leave it to a yes, they did it, no, they didn't do it, or no, it was not applicable to the call in question.
Yeah, that's exactly right, what Nick is saying. You boil it down until it is objective, right? You use the things that can be objective. And then for the things that I mentioned at the top of the webinar, you know, some of the items like tone and volume and etiquette, you just make sure you have a baseline. So if you have multiple managers judging compliance, you make sure that everyone's on the same page when it comes to those things that are a little more difficult to be objective. You can still make it as objective as possible.
Agreed. We finally took the human out of it and used voice analytics to measure our quality assurance, because, you know, there's areas where when we were doing yes and no, yes, they asked for payment in full, yes, settlement. Well, the management team would come back if they didn't pass and say, well, they didn't have an opportunity. So now our voice analytics software just gives them a quality score or a compliance score. And you can't, I mean, it's an average, so you really can't dispute it. And then the rest of it, the subjective stuff, we do call calibration. So there's always two individuals in the room measuring the success of those calls, the subjective side of it, you know, voice, tone, and did they do the right thing in regards to asking for payment in full, and did they have an opportunity, that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Are those two people, Kelly, just listening to like a sampling of calls, like a small number of calls? Do they listen to all of them? How does that work?
So a random sampling based on, you know, data that we've provided that said, you know, we want to listen to calls that are between this period of time where they were unable to get, there was a right party contact where they didn't get payment and it was more than 4 minutes long. So then the system just kind of gives us random calls based on that.
You know, as I said in the introduction, this is, you know, we've talked a little bit, you know, here and there during the course of the webinar so far. You know, objective versus subjective. You know, this is an industry that was largely subjective, but now is kind of moving toward you know, being very objective and very sort of thumbs up, thumbs down, as Nick was talking about, yes or no. My question, I guess, and Mike, I'll start with you, is, you know, you listed a lot of data points at the outset. Is there such a thing as sort of too many data points? I mean, you've got all of this data, but at the end, you're also trying to sort of figure out how that data is affecting the performance, or what data points sort of correlate to performance. So how do you sort of make that determination, and knowing whether or not, you know, a data point you're looking at actually is correlating to some, you know, improved or decreased performance from a collector?
The easy way is to compare it against all of the other criteria that you have. But I mean, I love that you opened up with art versus science. I thought boring, because art is just something you haven't quantified yet, right? Everything is science. But kind of backing up a little bit, you know, they've done double-blind research on pianists and violinists. Maybe it was a cello or a viola. But in any way, they've done double-blind studies. And what they find in these studies is that the subjective judges, right, the performance evaluators, that's what we are, performance evaluators, they rank performers higher who put more emotion into their work. So they don't actually sound any better. They just act like they sound better. So the point I'm trying to drive home there is, A, everything is science. No, not everything is useful. And the importance of pulling out the subjective. Because when you're using subjective measures, nobody is any good at it. So really, we start with, you know, objective measures, number one. And number two, we compare anything new against all of the data sets that we already have currently.
Thanks. Does that kind of match what you do in your shop, Nick, in terms of determining whether or not a data point actually gives you any insight into how a collector is performing?
Yeah, so I think that it's kind of like a funnel. So you take as much information and data as you can and get your hands on it. And then from a management standpoint, you look at it and say, okay, here's all of these different metrics, all these different points. What actually has some value to what I'm doing? Because not every metric has value. What's going to increase the bottom line or improve compliance? And then as you funnel that down, you know, it's kind of like a hierarchy of information. So you have a C-level executive that needs to be getting a summarization of the most important elements that there are to run the company. Then you have your mid-level management, which needs a little bit more information than what you're getting at from a detailed view from the C-levels. Then you have your frontline managers that would also get information, but they're going to get a little bit more detailed information from that mid-level. And then when you get down to the collector or the team lead level, they're going to have whatever information at their disposal that is very detailed and efficient to what they need. But I think there has to be a calming effect as to what information is actually being shared with them. Because you don't want, there is such thing as information overload. There is such thing as analysis by paralysis, paralysis by analysis. So you want to make sure that you're really providing, especially the agents, you're providing them the most impactful information that can help do what they need to do, which is drive more revenue and keeping in line with what that is. I would be very leery of giving them 10 or 15 different metrics, because it's just like the old saying, if you're having a conversation or you're holding a meeting, people are going to retain 20% of what you're saying. So if we apply that to paper, they're only going to focus on maybe 20 to 25% of what's on that paper, and some of it could be over their head. So if we can apply what it is that's going to really drive their numbers, and then also, as was said earlier, look at the peer averages and saying, look, this is what your peers are doing. This is what you're doing. how can you get to where they're at, or you're already above where they're at, keep up the good work.
Sorry. Mike, I want to take what Nick just said in terms of, you know, the data that's made available to collectors. By making that information available to them, do you create a situation where they can sort of game their results by knowing what's being tracked, and sort of, instead of, you know, maybe doing things the way it's supposed to be done, doing things so that their numbers end up looking better?
I don't care. I really don't care, because if they're making it until they make it, so be it. I mean, it's ultimately, you're not going to game the system in any long-term way. And I can tell you, the last 20 people that we fired in 10 months, it would be pretty patronizing to tell any of these millennials that I know what data is best for them. I mean, that's a great way to keep our industry with high turnover. Let them decide. Like, I'm going to give them advice. And yes, there's going to be hand-holding. And yes, that's what managers do. But I don't know. I think employees need to see the big picture. And someone who's going to stick around, A, sees themselves at your company long-term, and B, probably wants to get promoted through the ranks. Well, it's going to be pretty important for them to know how to get there. And I think that's what it starts with, because we base a lot of our, not just compensation, but a lot of our, promotions are going to be based on the same data that we make readily available to them. And if we don't, then how the heck are they going to know what we use to determine who gets promoted or not without having a candid conversation? So you can probably tell that's what candid conversations and transparency is what I'm all about.
Kelly, I'm wondering a fairly, I guess, maybe sort of existential question. Is there such a thing as too much data? I mean, or can you sort of, you know, as Nick, you know, the phrase Nick uses, analysis paralysis, you know, how do you sort of end up figuring out, you know, which data points really matter, which ones might be cool, but not necessarily something that, you know, is either affecting performance or something that's really driving, you know, any sort of result?
I think I agree. You know, we can analyze all this data, but here's the thing is, yeah, too much is too much. And if we could figure out what that one thing is that made a collector successful, we would all be rich writing books. So it's one thing we're always looking for is, if I just did this one thing, would I be super successful as a collector, as an agency? So yeah, too much data. I think we also get lost in that a lot, is that we are like, well, if you do this, 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 and this, and then, oh, and do this, and don't forget this, and look at this too, then you can be successful, where, you know, then they get lost. It's that, those millennials, they say, just give me the one thing I need to do. And sometimes it's just be really good at having a conversation with a person on the phone. And there's really no data that ties to that. That says, you know, you're really good at having a crucial conversation with the consumer on the phone, and you make them feel comfortable and you build trust with them right away. I mean, we can measure that through our RPCs, and I guess sometimes we have said, let's just measure RPCs, and if people can get people on the phone, then we can go with conversion rate. So, and then we can go secured conversion. So those three things, we've decided, let's just look at those for a while and see how it goes. So yeah, I think too much data can cause us to get lost in trying to figure out what that golden egg is.
Very interesting. Nick, so you've got this data points. We've talked, you know, for a while now about data and analytics and all of these data points. So, you know, at the end of the day, a manager, a supervisor has a report, you know, they're looking at their numbers. What's the, can you talk a little bit maybe about the conversation that they have with the collectors, you know, after they look at this report? Is it, you know, are they looking, you know, to sort of take that and address deficiencies, or, you know, talk to them how to make improvements, if they're doing well, do they talk about how they're doing better, you know, talk about sort of what they do with this data after they get it.
So I think they have to be very careful with how they approach the task at hand of communicating the information. So, you know, the first part is that, you know, goes back to the quote, is good enough, good enough. And a lot of people don't believe that. So I think that when approaching a collector from a mix standpoint, they need to look at that 3-to-1 or 2-to-1 rule of two or three positives to every negative. And, you know, when you're looking at a report, and let's just say it's a daily report at this point, and we're seeing what they're doing from the previous day, we need to be able to find at least a couple positive aspects for every negative one that we're going to do. And the negative aspect could be you needed more talk time. You know, you were in wrap up too much. You had too much downtime. You know, we really need you to pick this up. You know, what are you going to do today to be different? And we need to be able to find a couple of good points to take away that, hey, you know what, you were down a little bit in your talk time, but you did have 5 conversions and payments, so that was a good day. You know, it wasn't necessarily the average size payment that we wanted, but we were really happy with your effort. So I think that the manager needs to communicate it, but far too often managers just communicate what they see on paper and they don't dive into the actual depth of what's happening. So my recommendation would be to, you know, really have a good insight and information as to what is taking place and what they're doing well, rather than just looking at a piece of paper and giving them information that might not turn out too great all the time.
Kelly, you talked a little bit before about sort of the competitive nature of collectors. I'm curious, with all of this access to data, do they, you know, how do they normally react? I mean, it's hard to sort of, you know, put all collectors into one, you know, one emotion, but, you know, by and large, you know, can you sort of, you know, talk a little bit about how the collectors react to having all of this data? You know, is it something that they like having? Is it something that they don't like having? And maybe talk a little bit about that.
I mean, you know, everybody's different. So some people love data and some people, you know, could care less and don't even know how to dig into the data. So I would say you get a big gamut of all. I think what the biggest thing that we've discovered when we started giving the data to the collectors and giving it all to them, where they could compare themselves with other people, is they started then asking those people who are better than them the how questions. Because now they knew, like, they didn't have to ask, what is that person doing to get money or get more collections? What they do is say, how are you doing that? How are you converting so many calls? How are you getting so many right party connects? And, you know, they instantly want to blame it on, you know, the system is giving you all the better calls, where the data shows that that's not the case, right? So they can see that collectors, other people who are better than them, are more productive based on their productivity scores. They can see that they're getting more right party connects. They can see that their update time is smaller than theirs. And so the focus keeps going back to, what can I do to be better, and how do I do it, and how are the other people doing it, and what can I learn from them?
Everybody wants the Glengarry leads, I guess. We've only got a few minutes left. We do have a couple questions, but if you would like to ask a question of our panel, now would be the best time to type it out and send it in. There were a couple of questions that were sent in before the event that I'd like to get to now and ask of the panel. And the first one is, which measurements are the most predictive of collection success? Does anyone want to tackle that one first?
I'll go for it. I think that it really is two parts. One, for collection success, is going to be opportunity. So that's the right party contact. Are they getting enough right party contacts to provide them the opportunity to be successful. And the second part of that is going to be the number of payments, their closing rate that they get. Because you're going to find that you're going to get collectors that have a lot of right party contacts and they're not getting a lot of payments and their closing rate is low. That's hurting the company. That's hurting the client. That's hurting everybody indirectly. But if you have somebody that's getting the right party contacts and is also getting enough payments to where they're closing 20, 25, 30% of the calls that they're getting, then that's kind of the biggest indicator. So from a operational strategic standpoint, it's not up to the collector other than being available and working that they're going to get a lot of calls. That's more of a strategic back-end operational thing. But what they do with that call when they get it, that really becomes, somebody mentioned earlier, is it a skill issue or is it a will issue? And if the skill level is there, then they're going to get it. If it's a will level issue and they're not willing to put forth the effort, then it's going to burden everybody.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as Mike. I think that was Mike on this. Was that Mike? Oh, I'm sorry, Nick. I'm on the same page as Nick on this because I actually, when I saw that question come up, I actually, before the seminar webinar, I asked several people in our organization, all the way from our top collector to our data analytics team, what is the number one indicator that you would, if you only could have one data point, what would it be? And they all said RPCs, right party connects. And then the next one, like Nick said, is conversion rate.
Are you going to make it unanimous, Mike? Are those the most important predictors?
Was the question the most important predictors of success? Was that what it was? I don't see the questions.
Yeah.
I mean, so when you're hiring someone, the most important predictor of success is G-score, intelligence, and conscientiousness. So those are your best predictors before they ever step in the door. After they're in the door, it's work ethic, man. I mean, you can have a great conversion rate, but if you're never at your job, guess what? You ain't the top performer. It just ain't going to happen, right? And I probably mentioned it before. We offer unlimited overtime. So someone who's willing to work more and spend the time that they're here on calls and spending time with consumers, obviously, is going to be more successful. And attitude. Attitude's big. I mean, you see attitude manifest in complaint calls and some of the compliance audits, you know, and it's not worth even having your best collector with a poor attitude because you know where that's going to end up. So as far as predicting before they're hired and then after they're hired, I just don't think it's that complicated. The other thing I'll add too, somewhat related to this, is there's two primary missteps that we see, and I get it, but we see quite frequently when it comes to managing employees and having too many metrics. I'm using air quotes, but a lot of agencies, a lot of managers are focusing on work-ons. Focus on your employees' strengths, man. Their strengths for a reason. That's not to say you're not mentioning things that they need to work on, but focus on strengths. And the other thing is we spend too much time on low performers. If it ain't going to work out, get someone else in the door. You need to spend more time on your middle and your top performers. The people that you probably spend the least amount of time with is exactly where you need to spend more time.
I can throw a cliche out there that I can remember someone telling me once, and it's a hire slowly and fire quickly. I guess that would sort of sum it up. Nick, going back to the two data points you listed, you know, RPCs and conversion, what do you do with someone who's good at, you know, getting people on the phone, has a high RPC rate, but has a low, you know, the conversion rate doesn't really sort of match up?
Well, I think you have to determine, first of all, is it worth investing the time? Are they coachable? You know, because the bottom line is what we do is difficult. We work in an inherently negative environment that's not for everybody. So I don't know, we're talking about a hypothetical person, but let's just say we've got an individual that shows up to work every day, has a good attitude, puts in the work effort, gets people on the phone because of the way that they go about it, but they're just losing it. That's the type of person that you want to work with, and you want to find the best way to get them to try to get going and collect money. And then you have to give it some time. I mean, after, you know, a couple months, if it's not working out, then, you know, even though they meet 9 out of 10 of the criterias, we're a results-driven business. And if we're not in a position to where we see, well, what I like to look for is incremental improvement. So let's say the first month they're at 1,000 in a fee, not really where we want them to be, but where they are. Second month they're at 1,800 in fee. Third month they're at 2,600 in fee. If we can see incremental improvements and show that they're advancing month over month, that means that they're getting what we're teaching them and we're putting them in that right place. And I know we're kind of getting to the end, but I did want to throw out this analogy. And a buddy of mine's a football coach, and he coaches defensive backs, and he got some advice from one of the defensive back coaches with the Seattle Seahawks. And he said that, you know, you can break all of your, in this case, cornerbacks, but in general employees into thirds. The top thirds are going to be your heavy hitters, your Pro Bowlers, the people that you don't really have to worry about. You know that they're going to be successful at no matter what they do. The middle third are going to be the ones that are going to be your wind blowers. Some days they're going to be at the very top and they're going to do really well and have a lot of success. And then the bottom third are going to be those people that are barely hanging on. And like Mike alluded to, sometimes you just have to let them go. And so the focal point of that would be focus on that middle group of getting that middle group to really shy away from falling below the threshold to where they're now on a borderline of being terminated, and try to get them as the wind blows to move them up higher into that upper echelon. And that's where you can find to spend a lot of time rather than trying to just spend as much time as you can with the bottom, getting the least amount of return on investment.
We've got just a couple, we've got a minute for a couple last questions here from the audience. Mike, what are the expected number of contact attempts in an 8-hour shift? Is that something you could share?
So contact attempts, meaning number of outbound calls, number of accounts touched. You know, there's a lot of different ways to look at that. I guess I'll tell you what we do, and maybe this will answer the question. But we break down, because we do manually assisted dialing. We use a manual dialer for part of the day. We also use manual calling. And so we break it down incrementally. So we're awarding a point for every call that's made and a point for, or taken, and a point for every minute on the phone. And so what we say is in an 8-hour shift, you can hit 360 points, you're more likely to hit our quota, right? So we've got a predetermined quota for the month for everyone. But people who aren't hitting that point threshold, 360, even if you're great, your work ethic's not there, you're not going to get enough people on the phone because it's a numbers game, right? So it doesn't matter what your conversion rate is. It really doesn't matter, because if you're not making enough calls, you're not going to be talking to enough people. No matter how strategic you are, it's just not going to happen. So we've got our minimums. For us, that's 360 in 8 hours. And then every hour of is just a way to catch up. So any points that you make during an overtime shift just pads your numbers, so to speak. So the 360 requirement would be included in that. And then the same goes for conversion rates and everything else. We know what the minimum is for someone to be successful long term, and we rely heavily on those minimums, but then we work with the collectors, particularly new collectors, but seasoned staff as well, to come up with monthly, quarterly, and annual goals with them. So yeah, we have our minimums. Here's what your individual budget is for the month, but what's your goal, right? Here's your budget, but what is your goal? What do you want to make this year? What are you willing to do to accomplish that? And then we can work towards something that goes above and beyond what our minimums So I hope that answered the question.
I'm sure it did. Kelly, the last question. Is it best to compare an individual's performance to their own past performance or to compare it to their peers' current performance?
I mean, how about both? So if they're, you're going to compare their past performance based on their current performance, so you can see growth, because if there's no growth, then there's something else wrong. But also comparing them against their peers to say, this is what this successful person is doing. So like going back to what Nick's analogy is, that 20-60-20 analogy is we're always gonna have that bottom 20%. But if I'm comparing the middle 60, I want that middle 60 to move up to the top 20. So I'm going to compare them to the people who are on the top 20 and the people who are on the bottom 20 to see if they're growing and see what their growth is. I want to make sure they don't move. That 60% is always sitting on the fence, and so they can flop to the top 20 or they can flop to the bottom 20. So, like he said, I want the wind to blow them to the top.
Well said. With that, before we'll wrap everything up, we're a couple of minutes past the top of the hour. Before I let everybody go, I want to thank Mike, Nick, and Kelly for their insights and their time today. This webinar would not have been possible without their participation. I also wanted to thank Provana for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.provana.com to learn more about the company. Thank you to everybody who participated today. Thanks to everyone who asked questions and listened in. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. A reminder, a recording of this event will be up on the site in the next couple of days. And I hope I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.